Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Len Kasten, the author of The Secret History of Extraterrestrials. Get your thoughts and your views as well, followed by Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take your calls in just a moment with Len Kasten. Len, do you think there was a connection between Project Serpo, which again was ETs came here, we went there, and the Kennedy assassination?
Well, the landing that took place in 1965, July of 1965, in which we sent 12 astronauts to Serpo. The first landing was in April of 64, and Kennedy was the one who said that he wanted to make it into an exchange program. So it seems to me that he was planning to make it public and perhaps have it televised, that landing in 1964. So it's possible that that was known, and a lot of people did not want that to happen. It's just a possibility. I'm just throwing it out there.
Well,
because he was assassinated only 6 months before that landing.
Before that happened, exactly. That is exactly right. What kind of technology, if there's still some side agreements here, Len, what kind of technology do you think they've given us at this point? I mean, we could be hundreds of years ahead and we're not using it. Or if we are using it, it's a black ops program.
I think the main technology that they can give us, I don't know whether they have or not, is free energy. They know how to tap the space, what has been called empty space. They know how to tap that for energy, and that would do away with all of our energy problems overnight, literally overnight.
Instantly. And it's like Tesla all over again. They don't want us to have this free energy.
Exactly, because there's no money in it. And it would do away with the oil-based, it would basically eliminate the oil-based banking economy, the worldwide economy.
Right.
So I think that there are forces that do not want that known and do not want it to happen.
All right, let's go to some of the calls. We'll start by going to Ryan, west of the Rockies, and Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Ryan, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I wanted to make a comment first and then ask you a question after that, George.
Sure.
The comment is, this guy, Stan Fulham, who you had on your show recently,
yes,
wrote this book. You know, people are don't realize that his only source of information is from a channeler.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to a channeler, and that people think he gets all this information from some secret inside source, but he goes to a channeler, and if you read his material, it all has to do with global warming, George, where he believes that they're going to come and clean up the atmosphere. I would be careful with this guy. I really think people ought to do some homework on him because, I don't believe the guy, really, but... the other question I had was, and because there's so much nonsense in the field of UFO research that it's hard to sift through it all, including...
Yeah. You have to weed through it. There's no doubt about that.
Bill Cooper, everybody that knows Bill Cooper knows that he made a lot of his stuff up. He was an alcoholic. He was not killed by the police. He shot at the police first. But the question is for your guest. You mentioned Serpo. Where did you get all your information? Because it sounds to me like you're acting like you have all the answers to all these questions. I just want to ask you, do you actually realize that Serpo came from Rick Doty and is pretty much disinformation?
No, it didn't come from Rick Doty. It came from 21 emails that were put out there by somebody called Anonymous. And he was an ex-DIA executive who was involved in Serpo when he was active, and all that information came out through Bill Ryan on the internet. It did not come out through Rick Doty. Rick Doty was consulted later and asked about it, and he agreed that it had happened, but he didn't give any more details.
The Stanley Fulham thing, he's a retired NORAD officer, and he has been very uncanny in predictions of dates of UFO visitations, whatever these UFOs may be. And, you know, he gets them through channeling, and you know, he's absolutely right there. Did you have any cross information on him?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I don't know anything about him at all.
Okay. I mean, he's got credibility. He's a retired NORAD officer. I mean, that's...
Well, if he just used strictly channeled information, then I would say it might be questionable, but I don't use anything. I don't use any channeled information. Everything I use is strictly research.
Eric is in Ontario, Canada. First-time caller, too. Hey, Eric, good morning. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, George Norrie. Am I able to talk about anything I please?
Next hour, you can.
Okay, well, I guess what you're talking about right now is in regards to UFOs, right?
Yeah,
well,
so
I wanted
stay
to
on that.
Share a story with you. I actually saw a UFO pass by my house one night, and it's a very, kind of a sketchy story. I was just standing outside having a cigarette, right?
Okay.
And one passed right by my house, okay? Like, it's like I know for a fact it was an unidentified object because the turn that it made, right, was, like, completely out of this world. Like, I've never seen, any plane do before, you know what I'm saying? It went right down, like, my road, Little River, and it turned, like, around and, like, almost went, like, off into the distance, and then I never saw it again, right? And, like, I wanted to know, what do you think that... You know, what that could mean, like, into my existence that I happen to see a UFO.
Did anybody else see it, Eric, or just you?
Well, I was the only one outside, right? But, I mean, that wasn't the first time I saw one. And a lot of people, to be honest with you, think that I'm crazy because I saw a UFO, right? Yet, like, I hear about people in the world all the time talking about, you know, how they've seen UFOs before and that sort of thing. And I don't know, I think... To be honest with you, George, it's a very interesting phenomenon because what I believe is on a biblical scale that aliens are supposed to be angels of God, right? And what I believe is that when they come into our presence within the universe and that sort of thing and onto this earth, I think that it's possible that they're here to try and help us. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you're not alone with this, Eric. There are a lot of people who believe that these kinds of visitations are tied into that.
Yeah, I know exactly. It's like exactly that's what I'm saying. Like, and I'm one of those guys that I'm telling you, like, I know that God exists and I know that the afterlife exists more than any other. You know what I'm saying? Because I've had quite a few life experiences that actually, would attest to that fact. But UFOs, I think if anything, you know, if they were to visit the Earth, George, I think that we shouldn't show, hostility towards them. I think we should just show peace towards them because if you show hostility towards something that you don't know what it's capable of, you never know what it'll try and do to the human race, you know. And when people, when you hear about the military and that kind of thing, George, messing with this type of thing, like saying, okay, we're going to use your technology and we want to see what kind of weaponry you have and that kind of thing, what they could be doing is they could be trying to trick us into thinking, okay, well, you know what, we're just doing this and we're going to take over your planet. You know, this is one of those things that I don't believe the human race should mess with.
I got to tell you, Eric, we should name you as an ambassador because you're right on many of those topics as well. I guess, Lennon, in your research, and we've talked about angels, you believe in angels, I do too. But did anybody ever talk about the possibility that they believe that these are more of messengers from God or demonic-type forces? Did that come across any of your work, Len?
No. I think it's strictly... I don't think that angels would be giving out that kind of technology to the Nazis, do you?
No, I don't think so. Now, wait a minute. The fallen ones might, but not the good ones.
Possibly. I think that there really is conflict going on throughout the galaxy between two different types of forces. And
infighting?
As a matter of fact, I mentioned in my book that there's reports of massacres between the two forces of the reptilians and the Pleiadians and all of those going on for a long time.
We have a guest who believes that he sees with night vision goggles the battle going on up there.
Oh,
and
really?
he says, George, I see them shooting at each other, knocking each other out of the skies.
Wow.
The skies, really? But, the universe up there.
No kidding.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
And what kind of goggles are there that he can see that for?
They're third vision, night vision goggles. So wow. You get that greeny, grainy look. I've seen two with him, and I can't explain what they are. I mean, they're not birds. I mean, clearly you can tell whatever they are, they're way up there. They're making 90-degree angles. They're stopping. They're starting again. It's really strange stuff.
I think Dr. Boylan is correct about something. I think there are rules of engagement here between these two civilizations, between all of these civilizations. There's a limited number of things they could do to us, the bad guys. And I think that keeps everything in check, because our free will has to come into it. The free will of the human race has to come into it. And nothing can happen without our allowing it. And I think we have forces in our government that allow it. We have other forces that are against it. So this is the situation, the way I see it.
All right, next up, let's go to Newport, Rhode Island, east of the Rockies. It's Brooke's turn. Hey, Brooke, thanks. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, George. I had a question for your guest, and unlike one of your previous callers, I find your guest extremely credible.
All right.
So the first question I have to ask him is about Antarctica. It may have been on one of the Coast to Coast shows several years ago when you had a guest, and he stated that there's a center area of Antarctica that the temperature is very moderate, and there are actually woods and lakes and trees and flowers and everything. And I was wondering if he knew anything about that.
Supposedly, there are warm water lakes under the 2 miles of ice. I don't know if it's 2 miles at that point, but it's in the portion of Queen Maud Land that was settled by the Nazis in 1938. They settled it and built that base, and supposedly those U-boats were going right in there and disembarking at warm water lakes, which they call the Rainbow Lakes.
Okay. The next thing I wanted to report, and this is an extremely bizarre story, George. Yesterday on WBZ out of Boston, a CBS affiliate, they reported that there was a wallet found either at the Miami airport or at the Orlando airport with several thousand dollars in cash in it, and the ID was John Teeter. And then when they went to his vehicle, they found a lot of electrical equipment in it.
Is
that bizarre or what?
That is bizarre. I'm going to check into that one.
Thank you.
Okay, Brooke, thank you.
Thank you.
As well. Let's go to Alan in El Dorado Hills, California, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Alan. You're on with Len Kasten.
Well, thanks for taking my call. And I was wanted to ask Len his opinion or what he knows about alien bases on the moon, because this has come up, and I think it's very important if it's true. And John Lear, I believe, is one of the guys that talks about this.
I don't think there's any question about it. I think that's what—that's the reason we didn't go back. They just told us not to come back.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and most of the astronauts, I think several of them, have privately admitted to it.
And, that there was a base, or that there was actual aliens up there that they seen
in huge spaceships.
Oh wow! Okay, just like Independence Day.
Exactly.
You know, I think a lot of these movies got truth in them, and I don't know which came first, the movie or, if the movie came from, if somebody tipped them off ahead of time or if they invented this, but it's reflecting
truth. I think the movie makers, such as Spielberg, do get this information privately, and they then turn it into something fictional. But I think it's based on fact.
I think so too, Len, and really, real good show tonight. It was enjoyable talking with you.
Well, thank you.
All right, bye.
And why don't you tell us about the book again, Len, where people can get it, if you would.
Okay, on the website I have connections to Borders and Barnes & Noble and Powell's and Amazon. or directly through the publisher, which is Inner Traditions. They can just click on any of those, put in either my name or the name of the book, and it'll come right up.
What do you prefer to do? Go to a bookstore, browse around, have some fun, or just order it online from like Amazon and have it delivered to you?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. Do you have a preference?
I love to go to the bookstores myself.
Yeah.
It's just too cold and indifferent to do it online. I just love to wander around and look at different books.
I guess if you like to read a lot of books, going to the bookstore is probably the way to do it.
Do you agree with that? Do you go?
Yeah, it's relaxing. It's a different kind of feel. If you're just, you know, I got to have this book, I guess you can go online and get it that way.
Yeah, or now just to get it directly downloaded to your Kindle.
You know, I've just never been a Kindle guy.
Me neither. I've got to have the actual book. I want to
touch paper.
You know? I do too. I want to look at the pictures. I want to just hold the book. Yeah.
Let's go to British Columbia and Canada. Cameron's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Cameron, go ahead.
Hey, guys. How are you doing? Thanks
Good.
For taking my call, George.
Sure
Hi,
thing.
Cameron. Len, I got a question for you.
Okay.
I'm in northern British Columbia, and up here, quite often, I see lights up in the sky that are quite unusual. For example, something like a headlight that's about 100,000 feet up in the atmosphere, shining straight down, and then I could watch it for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, and then it just disappears straight up like a bullet. What's up with that? Any idea?
Well, if it's a white light, I don't think it has anything to do with ETs, because all the reports of lights being beamed down from craft are usually blue. They're usually blue lights. So if it's a white light, I would think it's something to do with some earthbound situation.
Len, what do you think about crop formations? What do you think they are?
You want my personal opinion about them?
Mm-hmm.
My feeling is that they were definitely made by ETs. I know that Colin Andrews has now taken the position that they're not. He says 80% of them are not, but I can't agree with that.
Yeah, but what about the other 20%?
Well,
you just need one. That's it.
Exactly. I think some of them are made by humans, and they're made by humans with very high technology. They're not made by two guys with a trample board. I'm sorry. I'm not going to buy that.
No, not the kind that we're looking at.
No, Doug and Dave. No, I'm not buying that.
Not at all. Have you, do you remember the Barney and Betty Hill case? Remember
Absolutely.
That abduction story? I mean,
yes, I do.
So, I mean, when you got into NICAP, that was a big story in the 60s. That's one of the things that got me interested in this field. And, I never stopped after that. I did interview their psychiatrist, who is convinced whatever they saw, they believe it was true. And that's a dramatic story. Len, hold on. We're going to come back with final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, are you a Coast Insider, a Streamlink member? You can be for just pennies a day and get your special downloads and all these kinds of goodies. And soon, Android apps getting very, very close to the process that we are very happy with. Pretty soon. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take final phone calls next hour. We've got open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. We're going to take your final phone calls here with Len Kasten, and then let's go right back to the calls. Kelvin, Bronx, New York. Hey, Kelvin, go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing, George Norrie? Yeah, listen, I've been trying to get through to you guys a couple of times in the past couple of months when you had a guest on about UFOs.
Okay.
Well, I live in the Bronx over here, Bronx, New York, and I've been seeing a lot of what I would call extraordinary craft. I'm a night owl. I stay up at night, and I watch the horizon once in a while. I look out my window, and occasionally, I'm located about 4 miles from the Hudson River. My window is facing in a westerly direction, and I'm telling you, on any given night, you could look out there, and you could see strange craft flying around. You know what I'm saying? And I think what I'm actually seeing, some of these craft that I'm actually seeing, might be of the triangular variety.
which could be military, maybe not. Len, in your investigation, what have you come across with that shape, that large triangular-shaped object? What is it?
We do have a triangular-shaped craft, and we've had it for many years. So it could be either. It could be the one that we have is an actual triangle shape. It's not a boomerang shape. The boomerang shaped craft would be more like the B-2 bomber, which is often taken for a UFO.
But the triangular shaped craft, some of them are reportedly a mile, a mile long.
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
Can't be ours. Not that big.
No, not that big. But the smaller ones are we do have triangular shaped craft that are much smaller than that.
Let's go to Carthage, Missouri, west of the Rockies. No, it can't be west of the Rockies, but Monica's there. Hey, Monica, go ahead.
Hi. Okay, I've never heard this question asked, but you're pretty knowledgeable, so I think you'll be able to answer it. I just want to know if the Mexican drug cartels that they refer to in the news as the Zetas, it really bugs me that, no one ever asked this question, but do you think that they could possibly be like the Zetas that you're talking about? Or do you think they're just, like, trying to sound, sinister by saying or calling themselves the Zetas?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
I think it's purely coincidental. I don't think it has anything to do with ETs at all. I think that Zeta must have some Spanish origins, the word, to have gotten.
I couldn't find anything, but I don't know. I just think it's kind of weird. They talk about it every day, but in our face, so I just thought I'd ask.
I know. I don't personally think there's a connection. I don't see where how they could be.
I'll just find out soon enough. Hey.
Okay. Thanks, Monica. Let's go next. Randy, first time call in Los Angeles. Go ahead, Randy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And my question was, what are some of the theories on why the Greys actually abduct people?
All right. Well, Len, we talked a little bit about that, but let's go through that a little more in depth. What do you think's going on?
One of the things they say is that they have no emotional nature. They're strictly robotic in many ways, and they're fascinated by some of the characteristics that we Earthlings have that they don't have. And they're trying to probe and find out how they can get that, and they've determined that the best way to get it is to create a hybrid. And so the hybrids do have emotional characteristics. And they ask some these strange questions about, they're trying to learn about the whole concept of rescue, why we would rescue somebody. These are things they don't have any notion about. They're brilliant in terms of logic and in terms of knowledge, but they're missing a big piece that we have and they don't have.
If this has been going on, the abductions, for 60 years, they may have created millions of hybrids. Millions.
Yes, I agree. They probably have.
Jerry is in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Hey, Jerry. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Okay, Jerry.
I had read a couple chapters of Colonel Kelso's book.
Okay, The Day After Roswell.
Yesterday, yes. And some of your guests, some of the things are cluing into me. He said that there's Nazi technology that, from what Colonel Kelso said, connected with the technology they found on the spacecraft.
True. That's right.
Yeah, and they were on high alert for a few days before that craft crashed. It may have got struck by lightning. It may have got struck by a missile. Who knows? But beyond that, what did your guests have to say about the Namos and the Dagon tribes way back in biblical times?
Who knew about the Sirius star system?
Yes, yes.
Did you look at that at all, Len?
What was the question again, George?
Well, the Dogon tribe, they knew about the Sirius star system way before astronomers even knew about it. They kept pointing up there when they were told about, you know, visitations and stuff, it was too strange, way too strange.
I agree. And the situation is very similar to the Hopi, because the Hopi do know that they did come from another star system. And they passed that information on from mouth to ear for literally at least 1,000 years, perhaps more. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if this is the same exact situation with the Dogon. And I think that book by Temple does cover that, doesn't it? His book about the Dogon tribe?
Yeah, sure does.
So I think they do pass this information on without having to even write it down. And how they do that over thousands of years, I don't know. But I think they do.
Let's go to Tampa, Florida. John's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hello. I just want to talk about human abductions and blood types. There's a blood type that just recently came out in the last 150 years. It just, through the evolutionary process, it just developed. So it's one of the rarest, just from that standpoint. The rest of the blood types, A, B, and O, are like thousands of years old. And less than 3% of the population has this type of blood. And I just found out I had it. It's called AB, which is kind of like the universal donor and acceptor of blood. And some of the famous people that have had this blood type have been like Marilyn Monroe and John F. Kennedy.
Hmm.
And I was wondering if you had anything where they did any experiments with genetic manipulation of our blood.
I'm trying to understand the question. The question is, has this evolution of this blood type been the result of extraterrestrial influence? Is that the question?
Well, basically, how much do we know about their genetic manipulation of us, Len, blood or otherwise?
Well, all we know about are the hybrids, that they do mix our DNA with their DNA to create the hybrids. To whether or not they're actually changing our blood types or influencing our blood types, I don't think they can do that. I really don't think that's possible.
Well, they probably can do anything now.
But... Well, it's possible, but to add another blood type to the human race, is that the question? Is that
basically
possible?
Yeah, yes.
Dr. Boylan would know more about that than me. Because he has looked into that in great detail. I wouldn't know. I don't know if that's possible or not.
Let's go to first-time caller Beth in Dallas. Hey, Beth, go ahead.
Hi. I was abducted when I was 6, maybe 7 years old. And I was abducted twice. The first time I was abducted was when my grandparents were at an egg farm. And this guy, this real tall guy, came around to the back of the car and asked me if I wanted to go see the cows. And I went with him. He picked me up and carried me into this place where there was this cow. And he bent down and picked up this gun-looking thing and pointed it at me. And I was like out like a light. That was the first time. The second time was I was abducted out of my room by two little short gray aliens. And then walked down the street to another house that was like a fourplex, like a big frame fourplex, where this woman lived by herself. And when we walked up the stairs, we went up to and one of the apartments. It was a big fourplex apartment building. And there were like 15 of these guys, these little short guys around the room. And one of them was standing on a table that was in front of the fireplace, and he glared down at me, and it scared me so bad I wanted to scream. And the next thing I knew, I was out. And the next morning, I woke up in my bed. It was very strange. I mean, I remember this. This is not a dream. This is not a nightmare.
My impression is that what you thought was a fourplex was really a ship. That you were really on a ship at that point.
No, this was an actual fourplex that belonged to a lady that lived a little bit away from my grandmother. This was a small town in Eastland, Texas, and I knew the lady. But we went over there like the next day, and she had said something about that sometimes at night that she heard footsteps upstairs and on the stairs of the fourplex. She lived in this fourplex by herself. And I said, it was those little guys. It was those little guys. And my grandmother said, she's having nightmares, you know. But no, I mean, I remember this. And she had, during the conversation, her name was Branscom. Miss Branscom had also said something about that her persimmon tree had just been, looked like it had just been burned up, like somebody taking a torch to it. And I said, can I go see it? And she said, sure, it's out back, you know. So I went out back, and sure enough, it looked like it had been torched.
Wow.
I mean, I remember this. And this was when John Connolly was running for governor. It was that summer.
Mm-hmm.
And he went through Eastland, Texas. And if you are familiar with Old Rip, you can look that up on the Internet. It's Old Rip. That's a horny toad that Eastland, Texas kind of made famous. But anyway, John Connolly was running for governor, and this real tall alien, the very first guy that took me out of the car to let me see the cows, he was standing in the crowd. And I went back to the you know, to see my grandparents after I greeted John Connolly and kissed him on the street, the cheek, and the whole nine yards. You know how they used to do that, kiss the babies when they were running for office. And he was giving out coloring books and, you know, Crayolas and stuff like that. And after I got my Crayolas and coloring book, I went back to the crowd. This guy was standing in the crowd behind my grandparents. And then I think it was like a week or so later, we went to this egg farm, and my grandparents always went and pick out their own eggs. And they got out of the car, went around the corner, and I was still in the back of the car by myself. And this same guy came around and said, hey, do you want to see the cows? And I said, sure. So I got out of the car, and he picked me up, and he carried me to the back of this dairy area where some cows were, and went through the door, and he bent down, picked up this weird-looking gun thing, pointed it at me, and I was, like, out like a light. And the next thing I remember, I woke up in my bed, and the second abduction happened about, I would say about 2 weeks later, was when the two little guys were in my room, and it was two real short little gray guys. And the weird thing about it was these guys plus the other guys they took me to were all these 15 were standing around the room, and that one was standing on the table. The weirdest thing about it was they were all wearing black derbies. That was just so strange.
Black derbies? Little derbies?
Black derbies, like black bowler hats. It was really strange. I'm thinking, why in the world would they be wearing black derbies? But I could have described these guys to you.
Well,
when I saw
Hopkins,
the...
Bud Hopkins says that sometimes they put screen memories into your mind, and you're not really... What you're seeing is something else than what's really happening.
Right. They let you think you're seeing these things.
In fact, people see... They think they're seeing sunglasses. They're really seeing the huge eyes of the aliens. So they can put that into your head.
Any talk of a mothership being up there, Lynn? And then little ones come down, little ships come down?
I've heard of that, yes. But the motherships are usually in a very high orbit, way up above the Earth. They don't come anywhere near the Earth.
Let's go to Anonymous, find out what this is all about. Hi there.
Yes, thank you, George. I sure. wanted to say I was at a missile installation in the early to mid-70s, and I wanted to, I'll take my answer off the air, but I wanted to run this past your guest and find out what his take on it is. There were a number of things I cannot talk about, but I will discuss this. When the troops were leaving to go home after their four-year tour was up in the Air Force, the commanders, even the commanders and other people, first sergeants, became more and more adamant that you had parents or relatives come out to pick you up as opposed to driving back alone. I thought it was kind of funny. It just never been dawned on me till your speaker, and you have also said some things in the last year, George, regarding people disappearing. And I don't know that these are space alien abductions or black ops, but they are very insistent that troops were disappearing on the way home. Since there were so few women in the military, it was more men than women. They would disappear. Sometimes they'd be gone for weeks, months, even a year or two. Their families then would, they'd come home. They'd have no explanation for where they'd been. I've heard from law enforcement over the years in small towns and so forth said they know of these situations that did occur.
you know, at and towards the end and a little bit after the Vietnam War was over during the Cold War, they would just disappear, and some of them never made it home. People would think they committed suicide on the way, or they ran off, or this or that. It did not make sense to me at the time. But what I was wondering is it possible, whatever this, if there really is an abduction program, whether it's space aliens or black ops, is it possible that's what they were concerned about? Because the most I could ever get, I would ask about it. I did not understand. And they would, some of them would take and point to the sky, and they go, well, what's up there? And they were as serious as sin.
I have heard that many of the abductees, I don't know how many or what percentage, some of them do disappear permanently. Some of them are never come back. So that's all I know. Now, I can't remember where I got that information, but I think that is a fact. That is a fact. So whether they were actually protecting those people or not, I don't know. But and maybe they knew that. But that does occur.
So many strange things going on in this particular field, Len. It is,
I know.
It defies sometimes logic and the imagination, but there's something weird going on there. I think that's probably the safest thing you could say.
Right? Yeah, that's the safest statement you can make.
Do you travel much? Are you at conferences? What do you do?
Well, I go to the Laughlin conference every year, the week-long conference, the UFO Congress, which has now moved to Phoenix, by the way. And since I live in the Phoenix area, it's
going to
be
perfect for you.
Yeah, perfect. So, but I've gone to that conference every year for the last 14 years, and that's where I meet many, many people, and that's where I had found people that I could interview for Atlantis Rising.
What's the next thing that the big disclosure, Len? What's going to happen? What do you think?
Well, what I'm hearing is that the Sheldon, you've heard about Sheldon Neidl, right?
Yeah.
And he claims that the next thing that's going to happen is that the extraterrestrials are going to make a mass landing soon. In other words, they're going to take matters into their own hands because our military and our government will never disclose.
Well, we shall see. Thank you so much, Len Kasten, author of The Secret History of Extraterrestrials. Up next, Open Lines. I'll tell you a little bit more when we come back.